Hey there, Michael Leibowitz joins us. He is a prisoner in the state system, has been for 22 years or so. And perhaps you haven't heard him before. He's often on during After Six, but occasionally we have him on earlier in the show. And what we wanted to do here was have a conversation that we could use as a setup for our Philosophy Friday question, which comes up during the next hour. So here is Michael Leibowitz. How are you, sir?
I'm doing about as well as can be expected for someone who's living in the big house.
Well, I think that's wrong. You do much better than one would expect. You've got
a
great spirit. You're intellectually engaged and alive. And you're extremely smart. So that's part of the fun of having you on. You are such a surprise.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
So the idea here is I've been telling Leibowitz that when he gets out of prison, he should run for governor. And he says, well, how can I run for governor, you know, with my background? I said, that's exactly why you want to run for governor. First of all, when people hear who you are, that's totally different than the guy you were. That gets you publicity, it gets you attention, and it makes people notice you for the unusual character that you are and allows you to break through. So what we're going to do is have a little campaign for whatever office right here, a little campaign interview with Michael. And then the question will be, would you vote for this guy? Could you consider that? We'll talk about it during Philosophy Friday. So, Michael, congratulations on the campaign announcement.
2026, Leibowitz for governor.
I like it. Which party would you belong to?
Well, I'm more of a libertarian, but I would have no problem hijacking the Republican Party.
Yeah, I think that's the best idea, because the libertarians can't hijack their own party.
No, they can't.
Okay, so you're running for governor. What do you see as the problems that you are uniquely positioned to solve?
Well, fundamentally, I have an appreciation for liberty. And I would state at the outset, I would like to state at the outset, that whatever platform I run on, I obviously can't guarantee that it would get implemented because it's not a dictatorship. But what I could guarantee is that I would never support any measure or sign any measure that would decrease the liberty of the people of this state, and I would only support those that would increase the liberty of the people of this
state. Now, I hate to tell you this, but the average person, I think, doesn't really know what you're talking about. What can you point to a particular law that exists currently or proposal that's on the table that would help people understand?
I'm going to get into it, but I wanted to give my little spiel first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you and all politicians have this need to speak in premeditated blocks of time. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I would just, you know, I would fight for whatever I said I would fight for, and I would do so tenaciously. And for proof of that, I would just say that Brett McCall and I wrote a book called Down the Rabbit Hole about corrections from within inside the system. So we took on, you know, one of the most powerful agencies in the state from inside its belly, where they had complete control over us and never hesitated an inch. And when I first met you and started coming on your show, I knew you were a Trump supporter, and I had no problem taking you on about Trump. Now, I didn't know. You might have told me, oh, that's it, no more. I didn't know what kind of guy you were. My point ultimately is that I'm not afraid to take on the people, regardless of what consequences may come to my
You're family. Willing to take a little risk to do what's right.
Yes, absolutely. So the biggest problem right now in the state, from what I could gather from listening to your show, is this $124 billion unfunded pension liability. So basically they plan on robbing the taxpayers of the state to pay off these people that are no longer working. So the first measure that I would try to get across is I would try to renegotiate that deal with the union. And if they refuse to cooperate, I would do so unilaterally. And from what I understand, there's now case law that supports my ability to do that.
Yeah, there does seem to be. I just want to clarify that since this is a hypothetical run in a few years, then that would require that we up that number. So because I'm assuming nobody's actually going to tackle the debt, and it's probably more like $180 billion by the time you're running for office. But I just wanted to throw that in as a little amusement.
Okay, so in my plan for paying that off wouldn't be tolls or raising taxes or anything like that. What I would seek to do is auction off state property. Sell, basically sell state lands to private developers. Now, what that would do is two things. One, it would raise money to pay off these unfunded liabilities. And two, by privatizing that land, those people would assumedly put them to use. You know, it'd have some economic development going on, which would ultimately create jobs for the people in the state, so you'd get a double win. Now, how many lands would need to be sold and how much the contracts would need to be negotiated would be determined once I had a chance to look at all the numbers, which from in here I haven't had the chance to do.
Understandable. So let's talk a little principle here, though, and how it might apply to specific things. So the selling of the property, for example, owned by the state, why would you be eager to do that as opposed to raising taxes or expanding tolls to include every single piece of pavement in the state?
Well, I'm all for privatizing as much as you can because that gets the government out of our lives. I'm basically in the tradition of the founders of this country, but perhaps quite a bit more liberty-minded. And that's also the reason why I wouldn't be raising taxes. I think that we steal currently far too much money from the people of the state, and I would like to cut back on that significantly. So in addition to what I just said about paying down the unfunded liabilities, I would seek to abolish the minimum wage, not keep it stagnant, not reduce it slightly, but get rid of it. Now, there's still a federal minimum wage that obviously I could do nothing about, but I would abolish that because I don't believe it's the government's job to be telling business owners what they need to pay people.
You're getting accused by your Democratic opponent, presumably, in this hypothetical 2026 race for governor, that you hate minorities and you hate poor people, and that's why you want to get rid of the minimum wage. How are you going to counteract that charge?
What I would like to know is how many of them grew up on welfare with drug addicts for parents? How many of them have been incarcerated with minorities for friends for over two decades? And then I would also point out that their policy of increasing the minimum wage actually harms the minorities by pricing them out of the labor market. See, that's part of the problem with our politicians on both sides of the market. They suffer from the twin killers of moral bankruptcy and economic illiteracy, neither of which I suffer from.
All right, that's very well put. We're doing a campaign interview with Michael Leibowitz, who is currently incarcerated in the state, but in a few years when he gets out, I'm encouraging him to run for office. So we're trying to flesh out his positions. So what's wrong with government the way it's being done, and what would be the principles that you would bring to the table that would make it simple for you to make decisions? In other words, if I feel like you're such a principled person and thus unlike a normal politician, that if people just learn your principles, then they would know what you're going to believe in advance, and they can trust that you will be pursuing goals that are in line with the American system of government.
Well, my fundamental political principle, which I've taken from Ayn Rand, is that the initiation of force is evil, that no human being has the right to initiate force against another, and that includes initiating force to take people's money to pay things that they have not consented for. And along those lines, another thing I would seek to do is get rid of the income tax. Now, how quickly that could be done, again, would depend on the numbers, which is why I would probably want to hire Len Suzio to be a part of my campaign, because he's a great numbers guy.
But why are you picking on one tax over another? Why aren't they all the same?
I'm just getting started, Todd.
Okay.
I'm just getting started. I would like to get rid of the income tax completely. I would get rid of the income tax before the sales tax because by keeping track of everybody's income, the government has to learn information about people. So that would be the first one I'd get rid of because paying a sales tax doesn't really put you under their all-watching eye, whereas the income tax does. So I would seek to get rid of the income tax, also reduce the sales tax.
I'm sorry, what was that about the all-watching eye?
Well, when you have to pay income tax, it requires the government to keep track of how much money you're making. I don't think that's the government's business, so that would be the first tax I'd want to get rid of. Because by paying a sales tax, the government's not, you know, watching you, knowing how much you're making.
Right, they don't need private information. They can just base it on the transaction.
Yes, which is better. It's not perfect. It's not great. But I don't think we can abolish all taxation at once, which is ultimately what I would want to do. So with those taxes taken care of, what I would like to do for education is initiate the voucher system. I think that the vouchers would stir up competition among schools, which would create a cheaper product and also a better product, which is what the free market always does. And I think that would give kids that are in these struggling schools in the inner cities, the very people that the left claims to care so much about, I think that they'd be getting the most help from such a system.
You have 1 minute left.
All right, you want to redial and we'll move on?
Running out, so I'll call you right back.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
The caller has hung up.
Hi, Todd Feinberg here, continuing our interview with Michael Leibowitz, who just had to redial because he is currently still a prisoner, and that means his phone calls are limited to 15 minutes max each time. So he's dialed back in, and now we can continue. So you just, well, we're doing a hypothetical run for Michael for governor in a few years when he might be out of prison in order that we can establish the issues and the principles with which he views them. So you can see what a really good, honest, liberty-based politician sounds like, but also just so we can flesh this whole thing out into a question that will be part of Philosophy Friday in a few minutes. So you mentioned urban policy, Mike, and cities are a problem for Republicans. They've been taking steps to start to build agendas and to campaign inside cities, but they haven't really gotten anywhere yet. What would you view as the key hooks that would demonstrate how Republicans actually are way better than Democrats on policy that would affect people who are poor?
Well, first of all, I don't know that the Republicans have actually taken steps. And secondly, I don't know that they're much better. I know that I'd be much better. And the reason I would be much better, for starters, because, I would be getting rid of the minimum wage, which actually harms poor people by pricing them out of the market. Also, by initiating a voucher system, they would be able to choose where to send their kids to schools and not keep them stuck in these pits that they're currently in. But also, I would, in the state, legalize marijuana, and I wouldn't legalize it the way that they're currently talking about it, where there's these special taxes on it and this and that, where the point seems to be to, you know, gather up more revenue. I would legalize it like any other legal product. You can go buy it wherever you want. I would also support a lawsuit against the federal government to end the war on drugs. I couldn't do that, obviously, in the state, but it could be done on a national level. The reason that those two things affect the inner cities is because of the drug traffic within those cities that leads to violence and incarceration in many cases.
So no, I think that's a good point. If the government has policies that lead to a particular type of crime, just like the government created during Prohibition, created the bootlegging activities that so many people made money off of, and that led to the creation of the mafia in this country. They've done the same thing with drugs, and that leads to lots of crime in cities, and that keeps urban areas unable to move forward because there's such a powerful incentive for people to get into the illegal drug business.
Yeah, if you look throughout history, if you go back to, like you mentioned, Prohibition, at the time it was the Italians that were poor. So it was the Italians that got into the Prohibition racket, to the bootlegging racket. And similarly, today, it's the African Americans and Hispanics who tend to live in the inner city, so that's who gets involved in the drug racket. And if we would get rid of the drug racket, get rid of the incentive to engage in it, we would, I believe, get it out of those areas and make them much better places to live. And then, finally, what I would do is reform the prison system. What I would do is transform the prison system, because I think it's beyond reformation. But by transforming it, I would make it do exactly what it's supposed to do, and that's punish, deter, incapacitate, and very importantly, rehabilitate. Mm-hmm. Because unless you're going to rehabilitate, then you might as well just lock people up forever. But that's not fiscally possible, and it's also not ethical. So I think that we need to focus on rehabilitation. There's evidence about what works to rehabilitate, as I've discussed with you many times. So that would also be big, and I think that if we were to do that, if we were to end the minimum wage, initiate vouchers, fight against the war on drugs, and fight for prison reform, I think we could gain a lot of votes from the inner city folk.
One of the things I'm not hearing from you, Michael, this is just by way of campaign advice, is and something you might want to work on, is that I'm not hearing pithy statements that create a handle for me to grab onto to understand exactly where you're coming from philosophically. Like, what is that thing that's going to make me want to vote for you? And I think if you're going to get rid of the income tax, which you suggested would be the first tax you'd want to eliminate, that's 50% of the revenues going into the state. So I think what you need to do is connect that stream of money and the elimination of it from going to the government with the idea that you're going to cut big chunks of the government out, and then paint a picture of what kind of economy that creates. Because I would think if you can, out of the 20-plus billion, let's say for the sake of argument, it's $20 billion a year that the government spends. If you can throw $10 billion of economic activity into the pockets of people in the state, it would seem to me you're talking about a huge economic boom.
Well, we are. And I'm not good at pithy statements because sometimes issues require an explanation and are a little bit more complex than that. A lot of politicians are given to sound bites and they make things seem a lot simpler than they are. But for the sake of what we're talking about, I will say that I'd be the candidate who's not afraid to cut taxes or spending. And people often say, well, what are you going to spend? Name one thing. How about everything? There is literally nothing within the budget that I would be afraid to cut. So with what you just said about eliminating the income tax as half the state's revenue, that's true. However, by selling off state property, we would get rid of the $124 billion, or by then you said it might be $180 billion, but by renegotiating and selling off state property, we'd get rid of that, which would get rid of a large reason that we need such revenue. Also, by getting rid of the minimum wage and the income tax, and legalizing marijuana, and also I would legalize gambling and, you know, probably a lot of other vices that are illegal, you'd stimulate business and you would stimulate economic growth and make people actually want to come here as opposed to leaving.
Oh, my God. By putting that money into, you know, when they do stimulus, they talk about putting a couple $100 a year back into the pockets of average people so that might incentivize them to go out and buy a dishwasher or a refrigerator. But imagine if you're putting $1,000 or $2,000 back into the pockets of average people, and not just a select few, but across the board. The what would happen, in other words, what the economy is being starved of for money because the government sucks it up and uses it for inefficient purposes, I just think would be too dramatic for people to imagine.
Well, that's what I'd have to help them do, help them to imagine it, help them to imagine a better future. And like I said earlier, I'm not a BS artist. I'm not going to tell people things that I don't believe or promise them things I can't deliver. So one thing I'll say is I often hear politicians...
Yeah, we've got to wrap up, actually. So
Okay, real quickly.
So put it into a closing statement.
Okay. I'm the defender of principle. The fundamental principles that I defend are those that the government is to protect life, liberty, and property of the citizens in its jurisdiction, and that's what I'll fight for, and untiringly and fearlessly.
I will commit now, Michael Leibowitz, to voting for you and supporting you in your run for governor, because philosophically, I think your position is closer to what the founders would have wanted than anyone else, and they're the ones who wanted us to be free. The people who have made this mess out of our government do not want us to be free. They want themselves to have all the money and all the power at the expense of our liberty, and that is what I think needs to be changed.
Agreed. Thank you for your vote. Free the con, free the state. Oh, Todd, send them to prisonermike.com.
All right, Michael Leibowitz, yeah, go to prisonermike.com. Make a donation to his cause if you like. Doesn't have to be much, but every little bit helps. Next hour, it's Philosophy Friday. The question is, would you vote for Michael Leibowitz as somebody who spent a big chunk, most of his adult life, in prison? So stay tuned. We'll talk about that.
All my wolves begin to howl. Wake me up. The time is now.
WTIC, good evening. It's Philosophy Friday. So we did that interview with Michael Leibowitz. And the question I want to do for Philosophy Friday, at least to start out, is how do you feel about the idea of somebody who's been convicted of a crime running for public office. Is that something you would support? I don't even know if there's a law forbidding it. There might be. But I'm more concerned with how what your reaction is, because we've been, I don't know, maybe 9 months it's been that Leibowitz has been on every week with us. And you hear how smart he is, and you can gain a sense, I think, of his character. I feel like I know him well. I feel like he's a friend of mine, even though I haven't met him in person. I spend more time talking to him and know better his beliefs and how his mind works, I think, than most people in my life. And he is more honest than most people, or as honest as anyone I think I've met. So I want to get your feedback. How's that strike you, that idea of somebody who's been convicted of a crime running for office? Especially, we're talking serious crimes that have kept him behind bars for 22 years so far, and he's got a few years before he's eligible for parole. So hop on the phone. This will be fun. What's your reaction to the idea? I'm a little nervous because I don't know what people are going to think, but I think this is fun. I'm excited to hear your reaction to the idea. Would you vote for somebody for governor or some other office if they had done horrible things in the past, but during their years in prison had used that time to transform their lives and their heads into a totally different place? 860-522-9842. Hop on the phone. Let's talk about it. Coming up on WTIC. Yeah, it's WTIC. Good evening. The weekend is fast arriving. Question. Would you vote for Michael Leibowitz or some other convict for governor? Is there something about criminal activity that, in your mind, permanently makes somebody unfit? And I'm wondering if your experience with Leibowitz, if you've had a chance to hear him and hear how smart he is and how good he sounds as a person, despite the awful crimes that he committed when he was young. What do you think? I have no problem now that I've got this specific guy in mind, because I know that Michael Leibowitz couldn't be worse than some of the characters who have held the position. Off we go to New Britain. Hello, John.
Hi.
What do you think?
Hi.
What do you think?
Oh, what do I think? My goodness. I mean, what other alternative do you really have? You know, the way things are going right now, it's not good at all, you know, and it's pretty sad that I think you got to start thinking of outside the box, you know, and need new ideas. We need new blood, new something to get things going, you know, and because this ain't working, you know.
So your position is you can't make artificial barriers to entry, given that the normal people coming up through the political ranks aren't so great.
Right. You're right. And you know, the politicians, the way things are going now, they're more evil and criminals than, you know, the criminals themselves, you know? So I think it's, you know, why not?
Well, thank you, John. That's how I look at it, too. It's much better, it seems to me, to have somebody who is migrating, who started out being a criminal, but now has migrated to the other side rather than the opposite. So thank you for the call. It's good to hear from you. 860-522-9842. Doesn't that make sense? Why not have somebody who's already been there, done that on the criminal behavior? Marty calling from Hartford. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Connecticut already has a history. What about Mayor Gannon? And there was a mayor, I believe, in Naugatuck that was convicted, went to prison, and came back and became mayor again.
So I guess Gannon proves that there's no barrier to entry for convicted felons at the gubernatorial level.
As far as I'm concerned, I've listened to Leibowitz, and You know, he's got his head on straight.
I think he's probably a better
politician than most of them.
I think so. I think he would be great at it, and he's got more integrity. That's what's so ironic about him. You know,
yeah.
He forces you to reconsider the way you look at human nature, I think.
So I would have no problem with him.
All right, good. I like hearing that, Marty. Thank you so much for the call. Have a great weekend. 860-522-9842. No problem. But I have to say there's something about Joe Ganim and his criminal activity that made me nervous. I think it's on a case-by-case basis. I can't say across the board that I wouldn't consider that somebody engaged in criminal activity, but Leibowitz is just, to me, an impressive human being who I could trust as much as anybody I might encounter. Bill calling from Waterbury. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Todd. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I don't know if I would vote for Leibowitz. I would definitely vote for Rowland. Every time they have a governor's race in Connecticut, I still put a Rowland sign up in my yard.
And why do you feel such attachment to a guy who went down twice?
Well, when he was governor, we had everything was running good. We had a balanced budget. The pension funds were funded properly. He did an awful, awful lot for the city of Waterbury. And he went to jail the first time for a hot tub because he didn't report that the people in the office gave him a hot tub. It's not like he killed somebody or something.
Well, yeah, but weren't state workers out of the house installing, doing work there?
I don't think so. I don't think that they got together and they donated money to buy the hot tub, but everybody else put it in for him.
All right, we'll have to reinvestigate those details because my understanding was it was a little bit more elaborate than that.
No. It was just the electrician did it for free. This guy did it for free, and the Democrats didn't like it because he went after Ganim. He was the one that put Ganim in jail, so the Democrats got even with Rowland.
Okay, so you think it was all political?
A friend of mine also, but it was all political, just like what's going on with Trump now.
All right. Thank you, Bill, for the call. Good to hear from you. Somebody who can provide a little of that history, is that accurate, what Bill just described in terms of Rowland? And if nothing else, Rowland proved he has an ability to get himself into trouble, which I think might be. And also on the union stuff, I don't believe that he was properly funding anything. That's my understanding. 860-522-9842. Join us in this conversation. Is there anything wrong with somebody who already committed crimes going into the governor's seat? Could you vote for Michael Leibowitz? Let's check in with Mark in Windsor. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Absolutely not. He's convicted. He's already demonstrated a propensity to violate some of the worst laws that are set up to protect our society. And we already have enough criminals serving in office.
Well, given that we have all those criminals, why not somebody who's already paid the price and understands, you know, apparently is reformed? Do you not believe in redemption?
No, he's only been good only because he's been locked up and kept out of society. So now once he's out of society, once he's back in society, that'll be the test.
And so that's when you start. That's when you start the clock on how long he can be good for.
Exactly. And for him to run for, and Joe Ganim shouldn't be in office. Rowland should not be back in office. No, they've been convicted of violating society's rules, which protects society. Why would we put them in charge of? No, that's the only reason he's been as good as he is because he's been confined. And yes, many people are incarcerated and they violate inside. That doesn't mean that I don't give him any credit for that.
Well, what I give him credit for is having been a drug-addicted, violent person when he was young, and having used his time, his 22 years in prison, to have become an impressive, intellectually vibrant, and really alive person. I find him so impressive.
Or we could say that he's used that time to increase his ability to be manipulative and more educated and more skilled at manipulating people.
In other words, some kind of criminal mastermind who's increased his expertise.
Yes, completely. So, you know, no, he's just going about a smarter way of presenting himself, to appear that he's not the criminal that he's convicted of.
All right, Mark, thank you for the call.
I'm
glad we got that particular opinion out there. 860-522-9842. Do you agree with Mark? I like believing in people. I like giving people chances. I have to say that I could be naive that way because I believe in humans, and I believe that people have to be given the chance to learn from their mistakes. And by the way, politicians, the way politics works, I can't imagine there's much risk. You're talking about putting somebody in a position of visibility. And if you have a sense, if they've created a clear sense of their own redemption, that they have turned. So my problem with this argument about Leibowitz, well, he's just some political mastermind who has figured out how to maximize his chances getting back out in the world. If he has that ability to self-manage at such an elevated level, why would he bother with crime anymore? If you can do what Mark is suggesting he did, then why would you not go out and just become a successful person? Because success is easier, I think, in the straight and narrow than it is in the crooked. Certainly, Leibowitz must have learned that. 860-522-WTIC. Ken in Willington. Hi, Ken. No. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Ken hung up. Mike in East Hartford. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Todd.
Thank you for the call, sir.
You're welcome. All right. So there's a word that comes to my mind, and that's the word repentance.
Mm-hmm.
Repentance is simply nothing more than doing a 180 in your mind. Okay, so you've been going one direction in your life, and then something happens, like incarceration, and you decide to make a change. All right, now that's something that we got to give anyone who has been incarcerated and would want to run for public office. We have to at least look at that and give him or her credit for realizing that their life prior to this massive change has been contrary to what societal norms would dictate and has decided to improve themselves, making the necessary changes. And the only thing we would really have to do is just look for those works of repentance, not just the fact that they improved themselves, but also what are they doing with that improvement?
Yeah, so I think that's a big thing. What are they doing with it? Thank you
exactly.
For that, because I think that's a big deal, Mike. I appreciate that idea being out there. What are they doing? That's what is so impressive to me about Michael Leibowitz. All this reading and studying and learning and self-enhancement, and he's in prison. Rich Windsor Locks. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how you doing? Good to hear from you, Todd. Yeah, I mean, why do we have prisons and programs of rehabilitation if we're not going to give people a chance?
Well, good point. We believe.
You know, otherwise, then, that's not what we're about. That's not what Connecticut is about or this nation. We're about helping each other. And somebody who paid their debt to society and is moving on, all the more power to them. Look at Joe Ganim. You can't tell me that Bridgeport isn't doing better under Joe Ganim than it was five years ago.
That I don't know. But
I just seen the city working pretty good.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. Thank you for that report and for believing in redemption, because I think that that's what it's all about, that we have to believe that people can improve themselves. You do have to look for signs. You can't be naive and stupid about it. But I think when you listen to Leibowitz, thank you for the call, Rich, that what you see is what you get. That's how I feel. 860-522-9842. It's Philosophy Friday. Our question is, can you vote for somebody for governor who's been convicted of horrible crimes and served 22 years in prison, most of his adult life? Well, hello, it's WTIC. Good evening to you, Todd here. The weekend here as well. We're discussing Michael Leibowitz. We did an interview with him an hour ago and talked about, imagined him out of prison after 25 years or so. He's been in 22 years. In a few years, he'll be eligible for parole. And I think he should run for governor when he gets out, because he's, well, philosophically, he's the guy I'm in line with. He believes in a liberty form of government. He believes in the American system of government, not this give free things to everybody to buy votes system that we're trapped in right now. So he would be a huge improvement over anyone I've seen run for governor or in the governor's seat in any state I've lived in. 860-522-9842. Your thoughts, please. Oscar, New Britain. Hello, Oscar.
How you doing?
How are you doing is the question.
Not too bad. I was listening to the interview, and it was actually fantastic to hear. The guy pressed on some good points. And as to the last caller, I get it where you're convicted. You had done something before. But after serving 22 years and, you know, the justice system giving us that time that we need to be, like you say, rehabilitated, it should be time to come back out and get into the public where you need to focus on getting the right things done. And with his focus on the gambling, the legalizing, everything that he talked about, it's just on point where things should be, and it should just be reflected on to other politicians, maybe. Or, and if this person that you had on the air today, of course,
yes, Michael Leibowitz,
cannot be voted in because of conviction, I was thinking maybe even a consultant or something.
No, I don't think there's any barrier to him being governor, because Joe Ganim, who's a convicted felon and served time, who is the mayor of Bridgeport, he ran for governor last time around. So apparently the rules leave it wide open, Oscar.
Well, that being said, I mean, being in power to make a situation that we have with the debt and everything that's going on in our daily lives to someone who, of course, said he has no fear of touching any of those bases, why not give him a chance?
Well, that's like what I say. Thank you, Oscar, so much. It's good of you to take the time to call, and I hope you'll do it again. 860-522-9842. What exactly do we have to lose? We've got a couple open phone lines. If you want to join in, call right now. Oh, wow. Oh, I just am so cynical, people say. I guess. Well, what is the proper definition of cynical? I'm not sure. Well, I know I have my fair share, but I don't think I'm cynical about politics. I'm just very educated about politics. And therefore, there is no way to look at how it is practiced in general in our society, but that it is a dangerous and not to be trusted profession in general. And the higher up they get, the more they have to be watched, the more dangerous they are. That's my take on it. Do you disagree? So given that high threshold of danger that already exists, why not grab guys out of prison? Why not? They've served their time. They've got to impress you like any other candidate. Michael Leibowitz impresses me. You hear him here all the time. Does he not impress you? Is there any reason that you wouldn't vote for Leibowitz versus some of the other people who have? I mean, I just have no doubts compared to the current governor and the previous governor that you could easily find any number of people in prison who could do a more honorable job. 860-522-9842. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to say what makes sense to me, that we don't need artificial filters for deciding that somebody can't be governor because they've served prison, because they even committed horrible crimes. Because humans are more complex, I guess, would be an explanation. Steve in Waterbury. Hi, Steve. Thank you for the call, sir.
Oh, hi. And I can hear you. You know, I'm just thinking about what you're saying about how it's a rigged system that they have. Now, if the criminals who are in jail were actually able to make the laws, they probably wouldn't be in jail. If you take Robin Hood, who, you know, the story goes that he would steal from the rich and give to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the politicians that will steal from the middle class, give to the poor and to the rich.
Well, they'll give to the people who will guarantee that they get to keep taking the money.
Exactly. So they're feathering, you know, their desk.
Exactly,
there.
Yes.
So the bottom line is, I see no problem with somebody who's been in prison, you know, if they're doing the right thing, get to vote for them, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, that's where I am on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think I trust him more than I would trust a lot of politicians that are there.
So why do you trust Michael Leibowitz?
Well, I'm going, you know, I've heard him before. I didn't hear this conversation that you had.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you and I sort of think along a lot of the same paths. I agree on a lot of things. So kind of would take your judgment from what you're saying there. Yeah, I'd have to look into it deeper.
Yeah, but in general, you're saying that given the context here and given the fact that I believe in him, that's a good starter for you.
Exactly. I mean, if you look at a lot of people who became politicians, you had that guy that he had blown up some buildings and stuff. I can't think of his name offhand, but he was like a radical way back in the time. You'd look at the leader of the Black Panthers, now a politician, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of people that had some pretty interesting past that went and became politicians. And I've seen people that weren't politicians that might have had a rough start in their life, but they turned their lives around, and there's a lot of great things for people.
Yes, that's how I look at it, too. Steve, thank you. Let's go to Tom in Canton. Hello, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air, Tom.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, it doesn't really matter almost who they elect pretty soon, because most of the laws and regulations are made by people that can't get fired with an election. Like your tolls is a good example. They want to set up a whole agency to determine the rate and where to go.
So you're saying that so much power has been taken out of the hands of the people, and our government has become so bureaucratized and undemocratic in its practice that what the heck, you might as well throw some convicted felons in there.
Yeah, well, you know, they either go in that way or they come out and, you know, get protected like Biden's getting protected now.
Well, all right, there's a that's a good cynical analysis, I think, of where we're
cynical.
At.
It's a shame to be cynical, and the best way to get even with a liberal is to be in a good mood, but anyway.
Tom, thank you so much. 860-522-9842. We'll take some more phone calls. Bunch of minutes left to go. This is a really important conversation, I think, because, I don't know, it draws on your personal philosophy. How do you feel about human beings, your fellow man? What of what you were taught when you were a child about how you have to give people second chances? Do you believe, or what has life pounded out of you in terms of trust and giving people chances? So I don't think it's foolish to give people shots. I think you have to give people shots. You do have to look at the odds and say, what are the chances here? But as I listen to and come to know and come to trust Michael Leibowitz, week after week having conversations, if I can't believe in him, then what can I believe in? That's how I look at it. If I can't give him a chance, despite the horrible, I mean, he committed horrible crimes, but he was a junkie. He was raised by people with addiction problems. At least this is what I've learned from him. And we know that people have trouble imagining themselves out of that lifestyle. But during his prison years, he spent time changing the course of his life, changing his mindset. And it is your internal narrative that really is the story about who you are and what you can become. And if you're raised in a house where you're taught crazy narratives, crazy things about yourself and life, then I don't know how you can have a good outcome. Some people do. Some people transcend that. But what Michael had to do was rebuild himself in prison. And I have to believe in him because he's so intelligent. And what he has to say is so consistently honest and insightful and brilliant. 860-522-9842. Joe calling from New Hampshire. Hi, Joe.
Good evening. Say, caught my attention, but there's one obvious thing I think you're overlooking, Todd. He would have, in Connecticut, he would have to run as a Democrat. That's his only shot to get elected, and he would get elected. But the other thing is, once elected as a Democrat, he would regress. He would slide right back into crime with all the other people that have crime-like behavior that are Democrats, the way they run the state dishonestly.
So why would he have to run as a Democrat?
Because in Connecticut, you have to be a Democrat to win with what they do. You know, they pull out extra votes at midnight if needed. You know, he might have a 20,000-vote lead at 1 a.m., and in the morning, he lost by 20,000 because New Haven or Bridgeport came up with a bunch of votes after midnight. That's why they shouldn't count the votes till 8 o'clock the following morning. Everybody turns in the results at 8, period. Nothing earlier, nothing less. Then the Democrats can't figure out how many extra votes they need at midnight.
Joe, thank you for that cynical outlook on the state of politics. I can't say you're wrong, but I can't be that cynical. I know there's election rigging that goes on. I know there's scheming and manipulation, but I don't think they've perfected it. I don't give them that much credit. My view of the Democrats is that there's a lot of incompetence. It's mostly incompetence that we see when we look at the Democrats. 860-522-9842. Thank you, Joe, for the call. Dave is in Brantford. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Todd. Good week. Thanks for all the good work. Remember the Buckley formulation? He'd rather be ruled by the first 500 names in the phone book than the clowns that do it now?
Yeah, I think he was right. I've often said before I heard that you could just grab people off the street randomly and you'd be better off.
Leibowitz meets that standard. The other comment is the crime that you committed is very important. Ganim and Roland were guilty of public corruption.
Yes.
They should not have been reelected. Whatever Leibowitz did, you know, it's not like putting a junkie in charge of the pharmacy or a drunk in charge of the tavern. Leibowitz, public corruption is what you'd worry about, and I suspect that's not what he did.
No.
His crime is not a problem to me.
Very interesting, Dave. That's some good insight. Thank you for sharing
Bye.
That. 860-522-9842. Do you disagree with that? If somebody's crime is not one of theft, or let me put it the other way, if somebody has been convicted of stealing, would you hire him to guard the pot of gold? And I think that's a really good point. Really good point. Let's go to Bristol. Armand is there. Hello, Armand.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for joining the conversation, Armand.
On the trust point of view, from a personal experience, I've been betrayed numerous times, and typically I was a very, very trusting person. Now, what that means is it doesn't mean I'm no longer trusting, but I learned something. You should never blindly give your trust. People should earn it. If they earn it, then give it to them. If they don't, then they don't deserve it.
Well, that would hold for all people, regardless of their backgrounds, because anybody can fail you, right?
Right. And I think where we like to be optimistic as humans, but I think we should teach our children, make sure these people have earned your trust. Just don't give that to them blindly.
Yes. Well, you do it incrementally, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and you learn as you go. Thank you for that, Arnold.
Well,
good insight.
Hard lesson. Yep, thank you.
Yep. Thank you. So you don't get a hardened heart. You realize that humans are complex and flawed. I heard somebody say once, or I read an expression, I don't know, that you don't really know what somebody is like until you've been in a financial situation with them, unless you have shared money issues with them, because so many people's relationship breaks down over money. And I think that's where, because there's a seduction to it, it demonstrates or puts pressure on people's character, and it's easier for them to fail. So I guess that's what happens to people when they get elected to public office. They see all that money and all that power, and they go a little crazy. So that's why sometimes we believe in people and they get elected and then they don't live up to our expectations. I guess you could look at a Michael Leibowitz and say there's a higher likelihood that he would succeed, that he would not succumb, because of the personal fortitude that was required to live the path that his life took him on. Thanks so much for tuning in to this hour and for being part of the show. It's great to have you here.